Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
We talk about you often.
Oh, I miss.
I'll tell you what. You know what really sucks, Sean? Is Portland without you. Okay, that sucks worse than Charlotte.
That's
single tear.
It means a lot. That means a lot, man.
It's true.
I mean, it really is, like, you know, even my mom said to me one time, she was just like, you're just missing like one summer in Portland. And I was just like, oh, how many summers do I even have? Like, it's just one summer in Portland.
I only got a couple years left in these knees.
Exactly.
Well, take solace in the fact that Alex said that they talk about you often. Yes. Because what that implies is they don't talk about me often.
Oh, my God. Well, Edwin, you've already been gone for a while.
Yeah,
so
yeah,
we're used to
you.
I've been done gone.
And, constantly.
And you ain't coming back. So
that's true, yeah.
And for right. Sean, it's like, oh, he's so close yet so far.
Yeah, get on my level, Sean. I'm going to miss every Portland summer.
I know. You're right. As I was saying that, I was like, well, it's Edwin's okay. going to be okay. Like, whatever.
I made my choice. Yeah. Crazy.
We have fully emotionally decoupled from Edwin at this point. So, yeah, no, we're good.
Oh, yeah. I'm dead to you now. Yeah.
No. It's all just because right. we hang out with Ryan, and then Ryan's in tears, you know, because you're not there.
Because I'm not there. That would be really
Edwin's
funny.
Just been gone. It's like, oh, Ryan. Oh, no. Are you missing Sean? What? No.
Who?
I haven't seen Edwin in months. Sean's whatever. It's Edwin.
Out of paper, out of stock. There's friendly faces around the block. Break loose from the chains that are causing you pain. Call Michael and Stanley, Jim Dwight Creed, call Andy and Kelly for your business paper needs. Or Dunder Mifflin, the people versus paper people. Dunder Mifflin, the people versus paper people. Dunder Mifflin, the people versus paper people.
Hello and welcome to the Michael Scott Podcast Company, a show for fans of The Office by fans of The Office. I'm your host, and don't get me started about how coddled the modern anus is, Sean Roney.
And I'm Edwin James, barista at Dwight's Caffeine Corner.
And with us, as always, our producer in the warehouse, Mr. Alex Ward.
Start your morning right with a burst of blueberry or try plain.
Every week we get together and talk about our favorite show, NBC's The Office. This week we'll be talking about the episode China. And then we'll head to the conference room. We'll talk about, we're going to talk about BJ Novak. We're going to talk about text thread dynamics. And then we'll finish up with some baby themed trivia sent in by a listener, Allison. So stick around for that. Before we get started, do we have any housekeeping, Alex?
Oh, just the standard. You know, the Scott's Tots family grows with every passing day. It is a big, beautiful cult of our wonderful children, all there to support us, to have fun together. We've got, as always, ad-free episodes on that feed. You get our monthly exclusive mailbag episodes, guys, just for the Tots. We hit about a 2-hour one this month that people are loving
huge.
Right now. People are loving. We got bonus episodes that we throw in there. There's a couple bonus draft episodes. We got our archival recordings in there. We got season 2 of Ted Lasso. I mean, the time is right. to become a tot, guys. There's been no better time in history than right now. So
come on,
pick
in.
Up that phone and dial. head over to patreon.com/MichaelScott. Support the movement. Support the show. Connect with other Office fans. We got a great crew of people in there. So
yes,
hit that up.
Do.
And then I don't believe our store is online. I think we pulled the plug. The
store is gone.
Our store is coming. Christmas 2002 should be ready. But yeah, that was we had to pull the plug on the store. It just wasn't the juice wasn't worth the squeeze. But that's not to say there won't be merch in the future. That's a little
teasing. We're gonna look about at a different way of doing merch moving forward. But
yeah. Well, that's about it for housekeeping. Yeah.
Well, there you have it. Thank you very much, Alex. Guys, China is agrarian, growing fast but agrarian. Okay,
this is fast. You betcha.
This is the episode where Meredith tells Oscar to suck it. We are talking about China today. It's season 7, episode 10, written by Halstead Sullivan and Warren Lieberstein. Of course, Warren Lieberstein is Paul Lieberstein's brother. Halstead Sullivan is kind of interesting in that I don't think that he did a lot before The Office, but he went on to produce the show Difficult People. Which stars Billy Eichner. So there you go. And then this was directed by Charles McDougall, who's directed many episodes of The Office. And it aired on December 2nd, 2010. Edwin, why are we talking about China this week?
This episode kind of follows a natural progression. On one hand, we did just talk about Annie and Daryl, and they have a little storyline in this episode with their texting back and forth. And then at the same time, we got a comment from one of our Patreon subscribers that mentioned in the lead up to our last mailbag that mentioned that this episode is just super underrated. And that an earworm that this comes from Alessandra on Patreon, and they mentioned that an earworm that lives in her head rent free is Dwight high fiving Jim with his foot. So it made sense.
I forgot how wet the foot is.
Yeah. So after watching bits and pieces of this episode to prepare for the Annie and Daryl episode last week, and after reading that comment, it made perfect sense to dive into this episode for this week's episode.
Yeah. Well,
that's
exactly.
Hot coffee.
So
just remind me of that. That's a great D'Angelo line.
Well, let's start at the cold open. Dwight attempting to gain the petty dexterity of a chimp.
Yeah,
that's right.
And all of us are sitting there looking like an idiot.
The invention of the foot-to-hand high five. I mean, what a great cold open in that it's not just a gym prank. It really starts with Dwight making a fool of himself, just like, you know, Dwight with the exercise ball and Jim hits it with the scissors. It's always best when Dwight is already being a bit of a jackass. And then Jim comes in with the prank.
I remember there's
a machine capable of his own destruction.
There's an interview with John Krasinski. I think it's in the Andy Green book. It might be in Brian Baumgartner's podcast where he talked about in the early audition sort of testing phases for The Office, they had like a test scene with him and Rainn Wilson, and that Rainn Wilson as Dwight was just making a beeping noise to try to annoy him. And it was like a perfect, summation of their dynamic for the rest of the show.
Yeah,
so
yeah.
This is a good instance of that as well, where Dwight is just doing something by himself, but it's so close to Jim. It interferes with Pam's desk as well. He chooses the worst possible activities to do, putting his toes near a pencil sharpener, and then also trying to handwrite a letter
and drink hot coffee.
Okay, before spilling the coffee. when he is like narrating writing that letter, like it's so funny.
D.
A.
Oh. Yeah, I mean it's what's the martial art where you like use your opponent's force against them? Judo?
Sure.
Right? That's one of the tenets of it, I think. Boy, I'm way off base here. Someone's gonna cry.
Keep going.
Anyway,
this is like you say, Sean, this is one of those good one where like that's what Jim is doing on Dwight, and his best pranks are where Dwight is doing this and all Jim is doing is stepping out of the way and giving him a little push, and Dwight's gonna fall on his face. But the timing of this one, I mean, this is like, you know, they've had six seasons before this one. They are, it is dialed in how they do these little cold opens. And, you know, there's not,
it is,
there's not a, like after season seven, some of these kind of old school, just Jim and Dwight cold opens, there's not a ton of them, you know? So it's nice to have this one. Considering everything that happens in this episode, I'm glad they went with a cold open.
I mean, just like before we get into the meat of this episode, just right away from the cold open, this episode just feels very timeless. It was kind of hard for me to find where it was in the series. You know, of course, it's season 7.
You mean
seven,
timeless, like it could have been anywhere in the show?
It could have been anywhere. Could have been anywhere.
I was going to say, it strikes me as one of the most time-stamped episodes of The Office. But what you're saying is within The Office. Because
you're both right. You're both right.
It specifically mentions the year 2011. It's like a cover of Newsweek from 2010. The technology they're using in it.
And a projection to the year of 2020. But you're both right.
Yes.
You're both right. There are elements of this episode that feel like it could have been placed in many seasons just because there aren't a lot of anchoring sort of plot storylines outside of Pam as office administrator, which clearly grounds it in season 7. Right. There isn't Jim and Pam's relationship dynamic from the early seasons. There isn't Dwight and Angela from near the end of the show, or Angela and Andy, or any of those other sort of, or Michael and Holly, or any of the other sort of anchor moments that are very, I think, signature of the different times and different eras in the show. And it's funny because these are storylines that could happen with any sort of thing. It's not about China itself. It's about, the episode is about Michael getting excited about something and how seriously Oscar takes himself. It's a way for the show to talk about Oscar's actually thing and put him against Michael. And then, so in that regard, yes, it's very, very timeless. But it is funny the way that the show does put a very hard timestamp on it with the mention of the year 2011, an economic projection that is supposed to go to the year 2020. It's really funny how both of these things can be true.
I didn't do the research. Is this article real that they're quoting, or did they just completely, you know, fabricate this, these facts?
You said it. When did this air?
This was December 2nd, 2010.
Oh, they would have filmed it before that.
Mm-hmm. This is good. You're like Ryan looking up the info on his computer.
I'll check the web.
But let's get into the main storylines of this episode. Of course, the first is Michael is upset by an article that he reads at the dentist's office. When another kid had the magazine that he wanted to read, he picked up Newsweek and learned about China. And then I think my favorite part of this episode is this B storyline, which is Dwight is the building owner abusing the Scranton branch, and Pam decides to fight back.
It is it's a challenge of her ability as office administrator. She goes toe-to-toe with Dwight. I guess, where should we start?
I'll also mention that, of course, there's the Daryl and Andy storyline, which I encourage people to go back and listen to our episode from, was it last week?
Just last week.
We touch on that, and we will a little bit here. But I think we should actually start with the B storyline, and then we can get to Michael and Oscar. Let's talk about Pam and Dwight first. Course, Dwight has a great episode that starts with the cold open with him using his feet. But I mean, what an exciting and brilliant thing for the writers to come up with for Dwight, that he now owns the building that the Scranton branch is in.
It gives them so much more room to play with the physical space in the office. So not only is Dwight, you know, instituting all these measures around the building to save money, but he's also built out the coffee shop, which gives him another area for them to have like this final scene, that little confrontation scene between, or it's a conversation scene, I guess, between Michael and Oscar. But yeah, we just get to see Dwight as the owner of the building just opens the doors for them to do a lot more. We see Dwight's office, we see the coffee shop, we see Dwight and Nate unfurl the big banner over the windows. Yeah. Dwight is kind of unleashed on the physical location of the office, and it's up to Pam to stop him.
Back to episodes like healthcare and stuff where Dwight is given a little bit of power over everyone and completely runs away with it and gets very evil.
There's something funny, too, about Michael essentially abdicating responsibility and pushing it onto Pam. There's no five families to talk about this. It's just Pam.
Speaking of that, I wish, maybe in the extended cut, but I was like, it would have been so great to get, this would have been a great chance to meet some of the other five families that we don't really like. Give me a Bill Kress and Dwight scene of where he's just like, what the hell? Like, or Bob Vance, like Bob Vance interacting with Dwight and having reason to talk to Dwight now Dwight just cave to him immediately.
Where the hell is Bob, or at least Phyllis?
Yeah,
I think
saying I might have to call Bob.
And based on the way that Dwight eventually sort of gives in and shows compassion to Pam, he knew what he was doing. He knew what he couldn't be doing. I think Dwight was just trying to see how far he could go. And Dwight, I think, was just enjoying using his power when he, in fact, did have it.
Yes.
At the same time, this does involve real stakes for Pam. She has so many ups and downs in her time on the show. And she really has to confront – she talks to Jim in the stairway about failure, about not succeeding at art school, not succeeding as a salesman, and now in this new opportunity, which seems to be kind of tailor-made for her. Someone who knows the office very well, somebody who's very empathetic to the entire staff. How can she fight back against Dwight, who seems to be, to use Jim's phrase from a later season, bitten by a radioactive Dwight?
I wonder, too, because this episode's coming off of, you know, woof.com and viewing party, and then going in, right after this, we go into Classy Christmas, The Ultimatum. Like, it kind of sits between some other stuff going on. I just wonder if, like, Dwight's experience with the Hay Place was like, I like that feeling. I'd like to own more of this. We know that their lease with Beekman Properties was up. We learned this early in the show, and that Dwight would have bought this. I can't imagine this was a cheap investment for Dwight. This was not cheap. Mm-hmm. Buying encouraged a commercial by, property like that outright.
And encouraged by Joe Bennett to do so.
Yeah. Yeah. Mm-hmm. But it does give him that kind of, like, I don't know. It felt like after Money in season 4, when we'd really spent time at Shroot Farms and also Initiation, but then leading up all the way through Money, where we kind of like we'd explored Shroot Farms, we'd seen Dwight running, you know, the Beats Motel at Shroot Farms, right? And like seeing Dwight as a property owner or running a property was very funny, but you can't keep going back to that well, like of Shroot Farms, I feel like. And so it's brilliant to just have him own that building. Because we get to see him, he revels in his own power and his own authority. He loves it. And like, it's a perfect way to give him that power that he doesn't have in the office. But he still tries to impose his will on everyone all the time.
He has some amazing lines, just like with this huge ego boost in this episode. I think Aaron or maybe Pam is trying to convince him that he's hurting the people that he loves, and he says, oh, you're right, this is my home, and I would much rather see a smile from Kevin than save hundreds on plumbing and electricity. And it's
to be fair, he does get a smile from Kevin right after.
Right back at you, bitch.
I love also when he's like, oh, you're a funny guy, Pam. Once he's kind of like on to her.
That is one of the best lines in the whole show, I think.
In the whole show.
The other thing that this episode does is it creates, in the larger sort of arc of the show, it gives Dwight a humanizing moment where he is on top of the world. He is kind of a victor, and he does decide to show compassion to Pam. He does relent. And it's very different from the Doomsday episode, which feels very similar, but Pam has to go make an appeal to him, and he eventually makes the decision on his own. And then you think, too, where at the end of season 8, when he's, again, on top of the world, and Jim is the one who has to convince him that he's set up to be fired, there's a type of episode where Dwight is given this type of power. And I think, Alex, you mentioned healthcare. That's another perfect example of Dwight getting power. How does Dwight act with his power? What'd you say? Oh, you said it?
It's just nice to win one.
There's a type of episode that gives Dwight these kinds of situations.
It definitely. And,
I mean, Dwight does say in the end, he does say not, he's like, not motivated, compassionate, but he does also say, like, I spared Pam. May I feast off her profits for years to come.
Yeah. Dwight K. Schrute, acting manager, also sort of falls in this. And maybe the job at the end of season three. But anyway.
Yeah. Reply it.
<That's>, it goes that way.
This episode stands out as well for having a lot of very signature props and set pieces, and one of which is the toilet paper.
Yes.
Deplying machine.
I can only imagine the meetings that were had.
I was going to ask you about this, Sean. What do you think it was like from a production standpoint?
I don't know. I mean, I don't know what the environment was like on The Office. I mean, season this late in the show, I'm sure that they had a great prop master and special effects, and they've came up with something great, but
it definitely feels like something Dwight would have brought from home, that the Schrutes built by hand.
It does
as a way
look
to save
like
money around.
You're absolutely right. Yeah. It's definitely made of farm parts.
Like his uncle or maybe Moe's built this thing. Who knows? But look,
how
something
much time
Moe's
do you think? How much time do you think Nate spends at the farm during this time?
He's probably running an errand there 3 times a week.
When his mom occasionally kicks him out of the house because he's going through her stuff.
From Nate's standpoint, probably too much. From a viewer standpoint, not enough.
Yeah. That is something I would have liked to have seen. Nate
the machine
at the beet farm
does actually seem to be pulling it apart when if you watch it again and kind of focus on it. And then I don't know if it was designed to make such a funny display when he tries to reply it, but it really works.
I'm sure it was.
The visual gag is pretty great.
And now I'm realizing, too, that they might have had to roll that toilet paper themselves if they really wanted to make sure it's splitting like that. But anyways, we don't have to get into that.
The other set piece that comes out of this arc is the giant roach banner.
Oh, yeah.
Yes. Yeah. Yes. That's a massive banner. I was looking for the seams. That's really all I could think about tonight as I've been... we've been printing a lot of banners, big ones. And again, that effect of it dropping it's like they must have tested that so many times, to make sure that it was going to fall in the right way. And then they pull out to, the ensemble standing there. So it's
the verbiage,
a very
really
dramatic
funny.
Shot. That's all.
The verbiage is really funny. It says, "We kill roaches. That's what we do." Or like, "That's our job." It's something like that. It's very, very simple text. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I was getting Breaking Bad vibes watching that again. Dropping that kind of thing. Mm-hmm. Maybe it's also because I watched the new Better Call Saul last night, but that's for another podcast.
Mm-hmm. But enough about Dwight during this storyline. I also want to highlight that, like, Pam, I think this is a enough. I think that this is a great episode for Pam. I think that, I am like very. I mean, we get the stairwell scene where she tells Jim. I love that she says, "I may have lied about some things," like, and then goes straight to. Like, there is no building. I lied about everything.
this is when Pam is standing up to Dwight and kind of getting some leverage. Like she says, she invents this building and gets some pictures offline. Honestly, I mean, the stairwell has some of the most intense scenes in the show, because this is not a light scene between the two of them. This is like,
I still think we need to do a stairwell episode.
We should do a stairwell episode. Because this gets really real fast, that scene. I mean, it's not easy to own your own failures and, like, be open about them. But I just found this scene really, really relatable, especially from just, like, a couple's perspective of what Jim, the way Jim is like, hey, like, when there's someone you love like that or a partner and they start to kind of implode a little bit about something, there's really not much you could do except that. Because, like, again... Pam is right. And it's not, it's really hard to say that so plainly. And you can say, oh, you're just being pessimistic, but she's being realistic. She's just saying, no, like, well, I'm not an artist and I'm not a salesman. So what do you call it? And it's very sobering, you know, and it's not like, it's not to say Pam isn't an artist, that she doesn't do art, but she's right that she didn't go through with art school. She didn't stick to sales. I mean, she invented this office administrator role and got that. That's a win. But really intimate scene between the two of them in a very different way from the type of scenes they usually have.
And then she really doesn't back down from her fight with Dwight. You know, she says, stop cutting the tampons in two. I think that it's, you know, yes, Dwight gives her the win with Nate coming in with the book and saying, I was never here. Mm-hmm. And she says, what? And he says, I was never here. It's an expression.
It's a pretty common saying. You may want to log it away for future use.
Perfect timing.
I smelled that one coming.
It's funny because we do see in this episode that Dwight eventually does show compassion to Pam, gives Nate the book of building codes, etc. But it could have gone the other way. I think one way that the episode could have been written is that Pam figures it out herself or figures out a way to stand up to Dwight. But I think one thing that it does effectively by having Dwight show compassion to Pam, I mean, on one hand, it humanizes Dwight. I almost said humorizes. It humanizes Dwight. And at the same time, it doesn't
very
set up...
Very comedically humorous.
It doesn't set up a dynamic of Dwight and Pam having to go head to head for the rest of the season. I think in a season like this, where there's so many plot things that have to happen, Holly's not even back at this point. That it makes sense to acknowledge this sort of head on collision between Dwight and Pam and kind of get it out of the way.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Well, I think
comedically humorous, Joe.
one last Pam note here too, in terms of it is an incredible episode for Pam. Jenna Fisher's acting is phenomenal throughout. Yes. I think one of Pam's funnier lines, there's not a ton of really funny Pam stuff, but I think the line when she says, wait a minute, a bigger idea than the Grand Canyon
is
really well done. Really well done. I think one of Pam's funnier moments.
One other thing that I want to mention from this storyline, I agree, it's a great line, and she's just kind of egging Michael on.
Yeah, of course.
In that moment,
she's learned from Jim how to do that so well.
Yeah. And Jim does quite a bit of that in this episode as well. That we should mention about Jim, that Jim is living in this not motivated to work zone, as spelled out in woof.com, where he's met his commission cap and isn't as motivated. So Jim, on one hand, you know, he says, oh, my God, I've been playing zombie soccer for 2 hours. And he builds that big rubber band ball. And he's kind of helping Michael. But he also is not as invested in helping Pam, I think, which is similar to the vandalism episode in season 9, where Pam literally talks about how she's kind of on her own and has to assemble the coalition of Nellie and Dwight. But Jim is also – he's on her side. He's supporting her. But he's not fighting Dwight the way that maybe he normally would.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, he's just a little more detached.
Fully aloof, Jim.
I'm sure there's so much more to say about this Dwight and Pam storyline because it really is a great episode for that relationship. But
it's like a real step up for her, like what she's supposed to do as the office administrator and be on the side of the employees. And it happens because Stanley directly says that. Are you just going to sit there, office administrator? Or are you going to do something? Like she answers a call, much like Batman in this episode.
Michael too.
Stanley throws the signal up, and Pam's there. So she's basically like fighting on behalf of her coworkers, which technically includes Dwight. as a coworker, I'm thrilled about a change of scenery, which is anytime Dwight is jumping between two responsibilities like that is always so funny. Between phone calls. Ugh, I love it. I'm busy. Make something up. Dwight is being questioned in a string of dog kidnappings.
Dog
kidnappings.
Trapped in an oil painting. I'm going to save that one.
Obama fashion show?
Obama fashion show.
But of course, guys, we have to move on. We have to talk about the A storyline for this episode, which is Michael battling Oscar, who is known as actually around the office.
Yeah, I love that
on the subject of China.
That they very subtly, I mean, not so subtly, but in a way that everyone, you just get a good sense that everyone's kind of knows Oscar's thing for years and years. And it's like, yeah, Oscar can be kind of insufferable sometimes. And like, yeah, he always does this actually thing. And so everyone's on Michael's side, like right away, which is so funny.
That's the best part of it.
Yeah. Everyone's like, here's a champion to fight Oscar. And I really hope you do well. Cause everyone wants to see Oscar knock down a peg, you know, cause I'm sure he's been like this for years.
In an earlier season, the way that this might play out is that Michael is really fired up about China. He calls them into a conference room meeting to give some presentation. All of them are not interested, and they kind of fake their way through it. But in the later season, they can use this episode to Oscar speaks up, and they have this dynamic that they, you know, reference previous instances about the tour to France or whatever it is, and then it becomes an episode about Michael and Oscar, which is really, really effective at that point in the show.
And that, you know, those two have had their moments. They've had their kisses. They've had their their run-ins. But
we're well past gay witch hunt at this point.
Well, and business trip.
Yeah, I mean, you know, they've
and the shareholders meeting.
The shareholder. I mean, yeah. They've shared several plots. But this one is good because this kind of goes to that place of a place that Michael will never have an upper hand over Oscar, which is his intellect, his just general intelligence. Intelligence is a strong word here, or intellect, because it's like reciting facts from a Newsweek article.
You really went after my intelligence there.
It's just a matter of recalling information. And once Michael is forced to do any critical thinking later in the episode, when Oscar asks him about the information sector, it's lights out. But you know, but then you get to see Michael's charisma in action, which Oscar doesn't have. So, but I'm getting ahead of my skis here.
I love the way that Michael the way that this storyline starts is just Michael coming in upset and Aaron just being like, what's wrong? Yeah.
Like, one of many, like, just Michael coming
in
China,
the
front doors.
Made in China. like just comes in hot right away.
Yeah.
The way that Oscar takes himself so seriously that he has to correct the situation. Yes. I think kind of speaks to how seriously he takes himself. That Michael is the one who's
I also only eat local organic produce.
The way that Michael is taking himself seriously enough that he has to do something about this geopolitical sort of conflict or arising.
China's on the move.
Yeah, exactly. Speaks to the way that how Michael sees himself, but Oscar feels the need to speak up and correct Michael and try to reassure him. And I think that's what separates one thing that separates Michael from a character like Jim or Pam, who just kind of let Michael do his thing. Like you said, an idea bigger than the Grand Canyon. they just kind of let it play out where Oscar has to insert himself, like they said, actually to correct facts or grammar or something like that. So yeah, he's the one to derail Michael after Michael starts talking about all sorts of worries compared to China and the need for big ideas.
I do love how it spins out. Like, this is a good, like, you know, when Michael hits Meredith with his car and then she has rabies and then he's, like, wondering, like, if they should pray to a different kind of, like, animal-human hybrid god, and then he starts listing different combinations of animals. Like, I love this, like, just, like, all of a sudden, like, he's worried about, like, China's economy being bigger than America's. Now we're talking about, okay, once a week antacid is the idea to beat.
Oh, I had that drop too. Beat me to it.
And antacid you only take every 6 weeks.
Too big a pill
to
swallow.
One of the great set spike jokes in this show. Lead up to a joke. It's perfect.
Another piece of this episode that I think helps it stand out is that a lot of these scenes, including the scenes between Pam and Dwight, are done in the presence of the full ensemble. So
yeah.
Yes.
Michael bringing up all this stuff about China. It doesn't happen in the conference room either, because when they go into the conference room, Michael is in this sort of leadership presentation mode. When they're out in the bullpen, the conversation is so much more open and people can jump in and speak a little bit more freely. And
especially
that's
when he walks in and says and yells, "Everyone stop working."
Now open your eyes. You never told us to close your eyes.
Oh, shoot. I forgot I was going to open the show that way by telling you guys to open your eyes.
That's okay. You never told us to close your eyes. But that allows it to play out that way, that Pam and Jim are there in that moment, that Oscar and Angela and Kevin are all in this. They're all together. And it plays out again when they go into the break room and they're all eating lunch. And Kelly and Ryan, it becomes less casual in the conference room, less casual in the bullpen is the break room, where it's super, super informal. And Jim says there's a lot of brain power in this room. Michael and Oscar are also in that order.
There's so many great lines that happen, though, in the bullpen. I mean, I mentioned it at the top. Meredith just say, "Suck it, Oscar." I love that. Which I think might be her only line in the entire episode. And then Aaron...
No, she says, so this building can get uglier when they drop the... Yeah.
Nice.
When they drop the thing.
And then Erin with her, like, whole, like, thinking that everyone is trying to kill her and has taken out a life insurance policy on her.
I learned nothing.
I love that that's just, like, you know, she just delivers the line.
You guys like that idea, don't you?
That gives Alex the drop, one of our iconic best signature drops. I don't know what the...
Oh, yeah, yeah.
And I was just going to say, that's one of the greatest bleep moments in the show.
Yeah.
Yeah, for sure.
But yeah, but then it leads to... I love that everyone in the office rushes to Michael's side. And not only do they discourage him from the confrontation, the smackdown that Oscar sets up in the coffee shop, which makes me wonder where they went for these other... confrontations like that with Jim and the Tour de France, or Andy, wherever Oscar went, because they seem to have all had these interactions with Oscar before.
Yeah.
And they do a great job of coaching him. They take him, they go into his office, and they're trying. Ryan asked him very, very basic questions about China. He can't answer any of them. And it's almost like an inner circle kind of moment where they're all trying to pick him up and coach
pre
him.
Pre inner circle.
Mm hmm.
Mm hmm. It's kind of reversed when Pam's going to fight Michael Michael's going to let Pam punch her, and everyone, Toby's giving her tips and everything, trying to make sure she succeeds. And like, everyone wants to see Michael succeed here. And when it comes to the showdown, I mean, Michael hangs in there for a couple rounds. Like he's really holding his own there.
Mm-hmm. Just when they're coaching him too, I think he says that he knows politics. And then he launches into California is bankrupt and California.
Yeah. And then that causes Andy and Jim to kind of look at each other and follow Michael into his office to be like, okay, he needs some direct one-on-one work. And he does, because, like I say, this is all from him not getting the magazine that a kid was reading at the dentist office, so he had to read Newsweek, and then he read it again. And he comes
the
in.
Highlights magazine.
It is pretty amazing that he was able to memorize these facts. Just, I mean, I guess he read it, and then he read it again, and then he read it again.
Well, then he went to NewYorkTimes.com and read more.
Right. About, right.
Just getting some facts, and of course, he's got note cards up his sleeve. Like he's really approaching this like a high school freshman, you know, studying for a test. Of just like, I need facts that I can recall, which. Oscar knows how to handle that pretty much. And that's kind of what Jim and Andy are telling him is like, do you know what you just agreed to? Like it's going to be relaxed. You're going to sit there and have coffee. And then suddenly Oscar's going to bring up something else and you're going to be lost. And then he's going to pay for the coffees and you're going to feel like an idiot. and all that sort of happens, you know, to an extent, but, I mean, I don't know if you want to get to the actual debate they have.
Let's do it.
That was the undercard. This is the main event.
Another thing where, a lot of the office is sitting there on bated breath at tables, and they managed to create a little coffee shop. You know, Dwight's Caffeine Corner is at capacity, clearly, in this entryway to the building. And front row seats, two minds battling it out.
And Ryan is encouraging him on. Aaron is there. Fire him. No, show mercy.
Yeah, show mercy.
I love that.
They're there to kind of cheer Michael on, which is so funny. Yeah. You wonder if Oscar realizes this or understands.
I mean, he knows. I feel like Oscar is very much like, he's like, I am defending my throne this episode.
Yes. This and would be after.
I think that's why he welcomes the audience.
This is after Oscar helps Aaron while she's doing the crossword against Gabe.
Mm.
I think so. I'm not sure.
This be after that. I would just, it would give more impetus for like why Aaron would be cheering against Oscar here.
The rational consumer, as it were.
Yeah, Aaron is the one who has apoplexy in that moment.
We'll have apoplexy if you don't win. But yeah, they, I mean, and they have a couple scenes, and they kind of do this almost like a sports movie where it's like, hey, Michael's winning, like early on, like he's doing well. You know, you see this trope in all sorts of movies where, you know, the protagonist is up and they're winning, and then the rug gets swept out from under them, and suddenly they have to scramble. And in this, it's like,
what are they going to do?
Michael throws down about the nuclear arsenal. You know where I got that? The Pentagon, our Pentagon. Yeah. They have the little back and forth about China loaning him billions of dollars. And then, yeah, Oscar finally knocks him off balance by changing it about, do you really think manufacturing is a relevant indicator of where the world's economy is heading in 2011? Do you know the comparative expansion of, say, the information sector? I'd say that's far more relevant, wouldn't you? The way Oscar says that, he knows exactly what he's doing. And that's why I think he's like, great, let a bunch of people come down and watch, because I know Michael's not doing this.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Mm-hmm. I expected Michael to say line, like in the deposition.
But he's just asking for a line, obviously.
Like in a play.
Yeah. First, can I go to the bathroom? No. But yeah, then Michael stands up and makes his Michael move, which is to appeal to the audience, to appeal to their feelings, to get them on his side. He does the same thing in the shareholder meeting.
Yeah,
limo lady, we're going carbon neutral. He does the exact same thing to a very supportive audience.
I love that line.
He just goes demagogue. He just goes Trump on him. And he just appeals to something that's not at all what they're talking about.
The look of shock on Jim's face when he realizes what Michael is doing is amazing. They even do like a tight zoom on Jim's face. But yeah, it's a very funny way to wrap up the episode, because that is the Michael strength right there. It's playing to emotions, playing to feelings.
I want to go way off topic for just a second, because you mentioned limo lady. And I got to say, we've been talking about a limousine on this job I'm working on right now. And I always want to be like, a limousine? I always want to say that. And I know no one's going to get it, even if they've watched The Office.
I request that you do that and then give us a report next episode on how that went.
A limousine?
No, Crux, you should be in jail.
He's had his limo ride. Yeah.
Edwin, I you're absolutely right. I mean, it's incredible what Michael does in the end. He turns it around. He makes it about heart. He makes it about
Hort.
This little chat, you know?
Mm-hmm. Boss and a money cruncher.
Completely. Yeah. I could have you fired.
You're forgetting something. This chat. Two men. One white, one Latina.
Yeah, one Latina. Which is a joke I never really got. Exactly. Yeah. Oh, really? No, I never noticed that he says Latina instead of Latino. But I mean, that I think right there is what makes this storyline not cheesy and really funny, and it kind of works with what I like about The Office, which is that, you know, people don't always get exactly what they want. It's like Michael didn't get exactly what he wanted by being smarter than Oscar. But he did get something else that he, you know, like supplemental.
Yeah.
Like,
he didn't get to jump off the building into the bouncing castle. But he still got everyone to applaud for him as he came down.
Exactly. Exactly.
Yeah. You brave heart, Mike.
I mean, other things to say about this storyline?
I think Michael's fears were valid. I guys want to talk geopolitics really
a quick. Lot of people say if you dig long enough and hard enough, you'll get to China. And that may be true.
I was taken by a couple, or I was surprised by one thing in particular, was the way that when they go to the break room and they're talking about Oscar and they're kind of threatening him a little bit, he like, or maybe it's when Michael walks in, he kind of like flicks his newspaper out. It just kind of makes me realize how serious Oscar kind of takes himself, and maybe how seriously he takes his position as the smartest guy in the office. And it's funny to watch all the characters rally behind Michael, because it just shows how much they do actually support each other. Pam calls them family, the people that he's worked with for years, his friends, and then they show real friendship to Michael. So a guy who has not been kind to them in the past all the time. So it just kind of shows the different bonds that relate in this episode, and it's a good way to shift focus from the early seasons where Michael is antagonizing so much. You know, and that's a signature trait of The Office, but to flip it a little bit around Michael and Oscar, I think, makes this a really effective episode.
Yeah, I think that, like, this episode just feels like you get to see a tremendous amount of growth from all these characters and the ensemble itself as a character. That, you know, Oscar really started out as this person who's very intimidating and, you know, is, you know, sort of this, you know, he's not like a unique person. Person in the beginning, he's really just he's Mexican, he's gay, he's an accountant, and for all these reasons he's offended by these things that Michael does. But to get to this point in the series where it's like, well, he also just kind of like annoys everybody in the office because he's always correcting them, and that he has his own self-importance of like being the most smart person in the office. And then getting to watch everyone rally around Michael to just, you know, take him down for that. I mean, it's, I think that, like, the show, although this episode feels kind of timeless, it also kind of maybe had to come in season 7.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah, I think it definitely did. I mean, there's all the relationships between, I mean, and especially within the Dwight and Pam arc. I mean, that had to have been season 7, you know. Not that you needed to have Nate there, but you kind of need to have Nate there at this point. you know, Dwight's caffeine corner is a set piece of this show, of this episode. And it's kind of funny how untangled the Dwight and Pam are from everything else going on. I mean, Jim kind of has a leg in both of them, but Dwight and except for Dwight catching the Newsweek and saying China is on the move, he's not really that involved with what's going on here. Him and Pam are doing their own thing. Mm-hmm. By the way, really quick on the Jim and Pam thing, we'd be remiss if we didn't mention their exchange where they sort of give each other the scenario of what's going to happen if they move, where it's like, you don't want to move right now. Moving's very stressful. And like Jim's going to turn to the bottle. You're going to raise, you know, Cece, and in 25 years she'll be world famous for stripping. Mm-hmm. Pam fires back. It's a sad story. Here's another one. Yeah, we leave. The bank takes your building. The bank takes your farm and beats the crap out of you. And then Cece dances on your grave. Fully clothed.
And then penniless, fully you clothed. Die. I don't know why I love penniless you die. That's one of the, and then they both have to use their hands for the motion lights.
That's a great bit throughout this whole episode, is every now and then someone just has to wave their hand.
I mean, that is so, like, thank you for mentioning that moment, because again, this is a great Pam episode. That's my takeaway from this episode. Mm-hmm. I love getting to see the ensemble working together. I love to see Michael versus Oscar. I think this is a great episode for Dwight, but really my takeaway at the end of it was like, this is really like a great Pam episode.
Yeah. Yep.
An important Pam episode. The only other storyline in this episode is the Annie and Daryl texting storyline, which we touched on in last week's episode about Annie and Daryl, of course. But we'll touch about it again in the conference room.
Okay, good. So we'll just all go down there together at lunch. Excellent.
I was thinking that
good work, Pam.
I think it would be
Pam. Sorry. I thought that drop was just the yay, Pam. And I meant to hit that after, like, it's a great Pam episode. And I'm leaving all this in because sometimes the drops don't go well. Sometimes I leave an edit in, folks. It's just how we run this shop.
Well, let's take a quick break.
Sure.
Head to the conference room.
Right now, conference room. Topic, potpourri, let's go.
This week in the conference room, we wanted to start with a new movie from director BJ Novak. That's right, Ryan from The Office has directed a movie. It's out in theaters now, and it is actually about a podcaster who travels with a woman in this true crime murder mystery sort of thing. I haven't seen the movie myself, but I hear it's great.
I don't think any of us have seen it, but it's out, and I listened to the Conan podcast where BJ Novak was a guest, which, you know, as an Office fan, was a really great episode to listen to. They talked a little bit about the movie, but they kind of just talked a lot and talked a lot about The Office. So I do recommend going and listening to that.
Yeah, and it's the kind of movie where I don't think it makes a ton of sense to go too deep into the plot as far as pitching it. But it's got a relatively positive review on Rotten Tomatoes. It, of course, is BJ Novak. And then if you listen to that episode of the Conan podcast, it's funny. They talk about Greg Daniels and him specifically kind of wanting to not timestamp episodes too much, specifically like not mentioning the year too much. Mm. And
here we are.
Here we are. Two very, very, very specific instances of mentioning the year.
I'm very interested to see it for the depiction of making a podcast and like recording a podcast.
You've mentioned this with Only Murders in the Building.
Yeah, I didn't see that. The last time I brought this up, or I remember talking, was the new Halloween movie that was like last Halloween or a year and a half ago. The movie starts with like these two podcasters going to visit Michael Myers at the high security prison. And the depiction of the equipment they're using and how they're doing it is so, it's just so bad. It was like distracting me the entire movie when it was like, these,
like,
I can't
this
believe
is a huge movie.
I can't
like,
believe no one not... talked to no one talked to anyone about how you would actually do this. Like, really? Anyway,
they did joke about in the Conan episode about an aspiring podcaster. I too can buy a microphone, but the barrier to entry is very low. Yeah. I think as we've proven.
Not hard. Well, it's a lot of work, but it's not hard.
Yes. Yeah. Not hard to start. Yeah, exactly. But no, good for BJ Novak. It's always exciting to see, you know, the actors, writers, staff, cast and crew go on to other things and to see them in different things. And especially as they go on these press tours, they inevitably end up reminiscing or promoting the Office again, which is
Totally.
Yeah. And totally. It's kind of funny because out of the central cast of The Office, like, you know, BJ Novak's certainly done a bunch of stuff, but he's been pretty out of the spotlight for the most part since The Office, outside of like Inglourious Basterds and a few other things he's shown up, and I think he's a lot more behind the camera, but it's nice to see him in the limelight here.
Yeah, he's done books and he's done more writing and things like that. Yeah. There it's a little more he definitely has a little more variance across his career than some of the other cast.
I mean, that dude could probably coast on his residuals for the rest of his life, but why would you want to do that?
Well, again, we haven't seen it, but, you know, we're a weekly Office podcast. We had to mention it. I don't know. I'm excited to see it and we'll report back. But what's next on our agenda for the conference room?
The Ordinary Things.
That is our building. And we sell paper.
In this week's Ordinary Things segment, within the conference room segment, we wanted to talk a little bit about group chats and group text dynamics. Coming off of the Andy and Daryl storyline, where they talk about what is worthy of a text and the standards to which a text message must be upheld, I thought it would be funny to talk about our own group chat, because we have to plan our show and our episodes and things like that, and then just kind of go into what makes a text worthy of a text.
Do you guys have a name for our group chat?
No.
No, because you, Alex, have an Android. And Edwin and I have an iPhone.
I was going to get exposed here.
So we are in the green text bubble, which personally for me
is... Oh, wow, you guys have your own colors? That's so cool.
That's right.
Wow, I'm glad you need your little colors.
Mm-hmm. you know, typically I would say I'm color blind, but no. You know, it'd be great if we could text on the computer, which is an Apple thing.
Do my texts not go into your computer?
No.
No.
Good.
They don't.
Good. Yeah. I hope they never do. And they never will.
I mean, we could be swimming in blue text bubbles, but instead we're in waters cold and Kelly green.
There you go. Nice.
Would you rather be in blue water or green water? I mean...
I'm probably the worst of us in terms of texting back. I blame it on, again, Alex having an Android. I can't see them on my computer during the workday. But I do apologize, gentlemen. I am the worst at reading and getting back.
We used to have Ryan on our group chat for the show, which was nice because she was just CC'd on everything.
Oh, that poor woman. Years of just text she didn't need.
I did that on purpose because she's better at keeping up with text. And then she would say, are you going to write back to the guys? Because they want to record tonight.
So you had a receptionist on the text thread.
And then you would say, Pam, yes. Pam, Pam. And then you sneezed yes. in my tea and then you said, don't worry, it's just allergies.
That's funny. That's
exactly right.
Well, I've
but
named,
I have removed her and I've spared her from that responsibility.
Let me tell you the best part about having an Android phone and everyone else having an iPhone is none of these issues affect me. Everything works just fine for me, including I've named our text thread the Dream Team.
Okay,
that's what it comes in as. It used to be MSPC.
That's so sweet.
But now it's the Dream Team, and it works great. And now that they fixed that issue where, like, if you guys react with an emoji. I actually see that now. Instead of, it used to send a text saying, like, Sean has laughed at the text message or whatever. So now it's smooth sailing for my Google phone. We're all good now. I run PC, Android. I don't have an Apple product in my life.
Who do you think
you are?
So Sean, I mean, you mentioned Sean, you mentioned being not keeping up the most with the reading. Who do you think, like, is the most responsive on our group chat?
Well, I mean,
it's Edwin.
Everyone needs to understand that Edwin is the leader of this podcast and the group chat. And I mean, I would say that this episode in particular is a perfect example because it's really, I mean, the text that we got for this episode is pretty much an email, but he knows that, you know,
time is money.
Our text thread is where we communicate, but it is there are paragraphs, there are bullet points.
I've tried to move our communication fully to Discord, but Sean has not followed us there. Yeah, Edwin and I will still occasionally put stuff on there, and you just won't do it. By the way, you could have Discord on your computer, and we could text that way. It's much better on the computer.
And we've talked about starting a Discord for our Patreon subscribers as well. We wanted to do that.
We have it ready to go. We have the Discord ready to go.
All right. I have been wondering, I don't really get Discord still, even though I've been on it for a couple of years. But, I might be an old dog, but I can still
learn new tricks.
Learn how to use Discord.
You can't teach an old dog how to use Discord.
But yeah, if you want to get involved with the Discord, let us know. It's something we want to get going, but we want to make sure that people are interested.
Yeah, and it would be, I think, somewhat open to the public. Tots would have a private channel, or maybe even Tots get access to the Discord, something like that. If you use Discord, you listen to the show, and you feel like letting us know, please do. If there's people out there who's like a Discord mod that would like to set our channel up and like run it, we are accepting applications. Hit us up, send us an email.
And then I guess one other question for you, maybe to wrap this chat up, is what's your go-to office gif?
Oh, great question.
Okay, so I don't know if we've talked about this. I'm sure that we have, but I do have a folder in my documents folder. I have a folder labeled reaction GIFs, and then within that folder, there's office GIFs, and I try to keep them very. I try to keep them all labeled, but I would say that the one I use the most, and I'll even use it with people who are not Office fans, is Dwight crying, looking down, then looking up, saying, thank you.
Oh, yeah.
That is, I mean, that's a great, that's anytime you need to say thank you, that's such a good gift to use.
I also like the one of Michael, teary-eyed.
Yep.
Same situation, yeah.
Yep. I think the one I use the most is, it's the one of Dwight going, yeah, 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 yeah. And they just put the word yes, and each word's like, yes, 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 yes. Love that one. Even though it's not, you know, they added the words to it, whatever.
I think the one that I see the most often is either Michael and Dwight raising the roof or Michael spraying Aaron with the champagne bottle.
Or the no God, please no.
Yeah, yeah. Office gifts are an important part of any group chat, including our own. But yeah,
the one of Ryan just looking at the camera and going like, like looking to the side. I see that one a lot. That's a good one.
I mean, there are some that like I just don't get to use enough in this folder here that I love that are like, but I have used them before. Is Kelly say? I have a lot of questions. Number one, how dare you?
Yeah, it's a classic.
I just sent you guys another one that's critically underused, I think. When they're teaching Dwight how to talk to women and he's doing the smile. it's very good.
Smiling and nodding, yes. Yes.
With a force.
Let us know your favorite Office gift. I want to know.
Yeah. Please, please, please.
Maybe we put up a poll on Insta or something like that, or like a favorite Office gift kind of question.
Oh, I could start a thread on Twitter. I could actually use our Twitter for something.
There you go.
Well, let's move on to some trivia and wrap this thing up, fellas.
Let's just do our thing, collect our hardware, and get the hell home.
This week's trivia comes to us from Allison. Allison says, big fan of your podcast. I look forward to it every week. I just had my first baby earlier this year, and while I was on maternity leave, I spent a lot of time rewatching The Office and listening to your podcast. I decided to create a baby themed trivia round. Hope you enjoy. Here we go. Question number one. How many babies are born during the series, and what are their names?
Cece.
So, like, you mean to the staff, right?
Yes.
Cece.
In the world between.
Both Phillips. Astard.
Are we looking for a number or are we looking for names?
I'm just giving the names as I go.
Both. Okay. But Alex just got four. And you said, Alex, you just got all four. And there is a bonus.
So Astrid, Philip, Cece.
Astrid the Phillips, Cece.
The bonus is really tough, actually.
Is it?
There's another baby.
Is it a human baby?
Well, Michael Scott has three unnamed kids and expecting another during the season finale.
Oh.
So,
oh, okay.
What about
Drake?
Yeah. Yes, yeah, baby Drake. Mm-hmm. Baby Drake.
What
Allison.
About the watermelon?
Yeah.
Okay, question number two. What is Dwight's babysitter's name that he brings to the dinner party?
Man. Greta?
I would say it was like Ethel.
It's like,
Irma.
Yeah.
It's a name that I have never heard before otherwise.
It's like
Melvina.
Melvina. Ah,
okay. Played by Beth Grant. Mm-hmm. Thank you for adding that. Thank you for giving credit.
The great Beth Grant of Donnie Darko fame, if I'm not mistaken.
That's right. Yeah. That's right.
Fairly carnal. That's all you need to know.
Question number three. What is Michael Scott's username for the online dating service?
Little Kid Lover.
That's right. Question number four. Which kids come to bring your daughter to work day?
Okay. We have Sasha, Toby's daughter.
Correct.
Jakey, Meredith's son.
Mm-hmm.
Melissa, Stanley's daughter.
Yeah,
that's right.
Kevin, does Kevin bring
Stacy? Just, just one more.
Kevin, Stacy's kid, daughter.
And what is her name?
Jamie? I don't know.
It's Abby.
Abby.
But you got everything else right. That was really good. Question number five. We do have 10 questions, so this is question number five. What item does Jan already own at the baby shower, but the office bought as a gift for her?
Orbit stroller.
That's right. How much money?
$100.
Oh, that was like
$200.
Like $1,500. Yeah. $1,800.
$1,200.
$1,200.
Orbit stroller. Number six. What was Andy's gift to baby Cece when she was born?
Oh, the front page.
Spring has sprung, and then followed by Scranton Strangler.
Strikes again. I love the way he just holds the paper up over the other one. It's great.
he has them in both arms.
Yeah.
Number seven, what is Cece's gift to the office when everyone finds out Jim was lying about jury duty?
Drawings.
Drawings that seem to have been drawn by Jim and Pam.
I love when they say brownies. No, but that would have been smart.
Yeah, that's right. Cookies. That would have been even better.
Yeah.
Number eight. What did Michael and Dwight use as a baby when practicing childbirth?
A watermelon and butter.
That's right. Covered in butter.
So the baby could be slippery. Anyone's. Baby could be anyone's except Michael's.
Number nine, how does Jim say that Michael is related to Jan's baby?
By delusion.
Yeah.
That's right. And finally, whose baby picture did Andy mistake as Angela's baby picture?
That's Phyllis. Well, so I hope the two of you are very happy together. Yeah. Pervert. How does it make me a pervert? Well, just does.
Well done, gentlemen. Well done, Allison. Thank you so much for sending in that trivia. If you would like to send us your own trivia, please email us mspodcastcompany@gmail.com. You can also call us and leave us a voicemail. Voicemail 503-694-9314. I think that we are we're well due for some voicemails on the show, so please give us a call. We're on the social medias. We have a website, michaelscottpod.com. We're on Patreon, patreon.com/michaelscott. You heard about it at the beginning of the show. If you like the show, please come and support us. We do donate a portion of those funds to the Thurgood Marshall College Fund. So special thanks to our Scott's Tots. We love you guys so much. Thank you so much for supporting this show. Special thanks to Ryan Lloyd, who designs our artwork. This episode was recorded over video chat.
Thank you for listening. Thanks for hanging out with us, listening to us talk about The Office, our favorite show, talk about our own group text thread, movies that we haven't seen, and anything else related to The Office. So just thank you for hanging out and supporting us, for listening. Just know that we appreciate it.
I don't know why you would want to listen to us talk about
it. You didn't say the weather was bad. But no, just thank you. We appreciate it really and truly. So thank you again. Take care. Stay safe. See you next week.
Pippity poppy, give me the song.
Yes, sir.
Da 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 da.
Seeking the truth never gets old. Introducing June's Journey, the free-to-play mobile game that will immerse you in a thrilling murder mystery. Join June Parker as she uncovers hidden objects and clues to solve her sister's death in a beautifully illustrated world set in the roaring 20s. With new chapters added every week, the excitement never ends. Download June's Journey now on your Android or iOS device, or play on PC through Facebook Games.